Hi everyone, Ruben Dinarina here. I'm really excited today to interview Nikki Gumbel, who has a very interesting journey and background, from starting off as a barrister to transforming the Alpha Course, which has reached over 20 million people around the world. Nikki is now the vicar at Holy Trinity Brompton. Nikki, thanks for agreeing to make this happen.
Great to be with you, Ruben.
Great. So to start off, why don't you tell us some more about your background and how you went from living in many ways a very secular life as a barrister to now a vicar at HGB, and yeah, transforming millions of people's lives through Alpha. Like, how does that happen?
So my parents were not churchgoers. My mother was a sort of non-practicing sort of Church of England. She would have put on a form, Church of England, without ever going to church. My father was a refugee. So he was a Jewish refugee. He was a lawyer in Germany. And he was disbarred. When Hitler came to power in 1933, he was disbarred. So he had already actually qualified as a barrister in England. So he came over here and practiced law. He was interned in the first week of the war, but later joined the army in 1942 and ended up as a full colonel in the British Army. But a totally secular Jew. And I knew nothing about him, because when I was 14, my mother took me and my sister for a walk and said, "Your father is German and Jewish, and you're never to speak to him about it." And I never did. So I discovered nothing about him. But now, in the last few years, I've got hold of my family tree and seen the concentration camps into which they were all sent. And now I realize why he couldn't speak about it. I would say now, probably he was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder from what had happened to his family and his friends and to himself. So that was my background. And he was a secular Jew, but he was a barrister. All my family are barristers. My mother was a barrister. My sister is a very successful QC. My grandfathers on both sides were barristers. My uncle's a barrister. Like I've got three children. Two of them have qualified as barristers. Wow. Anyway, so I had to do law. So I read law at Cambridge, and then I loved being a barrister. But at the same time, in my first year at university, I had encountered Jesus through reading the New Testament. And Jesus said, "I came that you might have life and have it in all its fullness." And I discovered that. And I was excited about it. And even when I was working as a barrister, what I really wanted to do was for people to know the difference that's possible in a relationship with God through Jesus. So I sensed a call, really, to ordination in the Church of England. And so I went off to Oxford. I did a theology degree at Oxford, and then I was ordained in 1986 and have been a Church of England minister since then.
Wow. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think that's an incredible kind of story. I want to switch gears a bit and talk about what advice would you have for particularly young people today who are about to enter the world of work? Yeah. And yeah, like, I guess in recent years, like, finding purpose at work is like one of the greatest challenges, I think, right now. And yeah, many of us struggle to live our faith from Monday to Friday. So what advice do you have on actually finding purpose and meaning at work?
Well, I think your work is your primary ministry. Your work, every job is like service and has purpose. So and when I was thinking, shall I get ordained or shall I stay as a lawyer? I read in the New Testament, Zenas the lawyer. So clearly there were people in the New Testament times who were members of the church who were lawyers and all every other variety of job. So there's nothing wrong with being a Christian banker or lawyer or road sweeper or shop assistant or doctor. You know, every job is in a sense a service to other people. And that is your primary ministry. I just told a story just now about a woman who was working as a shop assistant, and she had literally her sphere of influence was 6 foot. Basically, she sat, you know, there checking people out, bagging their vegetables, because of her faith, what she did was she greeted everybody enthusiastically. She learnt their names. She asked about their families. And when they left, she said, I'm going to pray for you and your family. She was so popular, it caused a real problem in the supermarket, because there'd be four checkouts, three of them would be completely empty, and then there'd be this massive line of people waiting to be checked out by her. And when she died, apparently the church was absolutely rammed with all the people who had been impacted by her life. So whatever your job is, you can do it in a way that has influence on other people's lives. That's why every job is a vocation.
Yeah, that I think it's so true about how even if we're doing something seen as quite small or something less kind of significant, everything does have, you can actually have an impact with whatever you do, as long as you're kind of putting your heart into it and doing your best.
And it's interesting, Ruben, right now, I think one of the really interesting things, so COVID-19 is a horrible disease. Okay, so but God can take something that is horrible and use it for good. And I think he is using it for good in many different ways. One of the ways is he's got people's attention. That's why we're finding so many more people coming on Alpha than we've ever experienced before, because people are searching. But another way in which I think God is using it is he's turned our values upside down. Maybe right way up is a better way to put it, because, you know, who before valued in the same way that we do the NHS, the nurses, the doctors, the porters, but not just them. You know, I my values have changed. I value the person who's Alex, my friend who sweeps the streets here, so much more. I value bus drivers. You know, when I look at a bus driver, I think, wow, you know, you are, what you're doing is so important right now. The people who pick up the rubbish, I don't think I ever thanked them before, but I always say now, and I say, thank you so much for the job that you're doing. And the people who work in the shops, again, likewise, thank you that you have kept on serving during this pandemic. And we're recognizing that the kind of jobs that weren't particularly rated in our society and certainly aren't particularly rewarded in terms of pay are actually some of the most important services with huge value and purpose in our society.
Yeah, that's so true. Like I was just, when you said that, the first thing that came to mind is teachers. Like they're so important, but yeah, like they're paid quite low compared to what they're actually doing and how they're impacting the next generations.
We're teaching a massive example, but also they were underappreciated until now. Oh my goodness, parents! When you tell parents with young children, you know your children may, the schools may close. Mm. They're like, oh no, I cannot cope with another term of my children at home. Please may the schools, they really appreciate the teachers now, because they do a fantastic job, and that's a great vocation as well. What an impact you're having on the next generation. And what you teach really matters, how you teach, and you know I'm so thankful. I didn't realize how much I appreciated some of my teachers. It was only about like 5 years ago I wrote, because I'd always appreciated the person who taught me English, because I wasn't very good at writing. My sort of natural abilities were in maths, but not at all in sort of history or English. But I decided to do English A level, and the person who taught me English A level inspired me so much. And so about 5 years ago, nice, and he's an old man, but I wrote to him, and I felt so bad that it had taken me like almost 50 years to write to him and tell him, thank you so much for what you taught me. I'm so grateful, because actually I've written a few books. I couldn't have done it if it hadn't been for what he taught me.
Yeah. Yeah. I was about to say, like, it's incredible, because now you've written so many different books, right? And I certainly know in my own life the impact that certain teachers have had. It really makes a huge difference. I want to ask you about how today, like, there's so many options when it comes to choosing a career, and it can be very difficult. So how would you recommend people kind of discern that? Because there's a lot of different options, and it can be quite overwhelming. So how do you discern a big decision like your career? Because it does take up a huge amount of your life. So
no, it is. It's a huge amount. I think it's the average person spends 92,100 hours at work.
Wow.
It's approximately a third of your life.
Yeah.
In my case, a third of my life is spent asleep. The other third is, well, I don't know what, I probably spend more than a third of my life working, but the average person spends, it's the same time apparently as watching the whole Netflix library, 92,000. 100 hours. Wow. So it's a long time, and it really, in that sense, it really matters. Although work patterns are changing now, in the sense that, so my generation, or certainly the generation before me, you did one job for life. Like, you decided when you were whatever your age, what you're going to do, and you did it until you retired at 65 or whatever. And now I think it's changed, and people are saying that people would do an average of 5 jobs in the course of a lifetime. And so that was the sort of generation maybe before you. And now they say about your generation that you'll do 5 jobs at the same time. So you'll have, so like my son-in-law is a rapper. He's a plumber. He's a property developer. He's a Bitcoin investor. You know, he's got all these different jobs that he does. And I think that will be much more how the future looks. People won't necessarily just settle in one career and think that they're going to be there for the rest of their life. And I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I mean, you're right. It does matter what you do and how do you choose that? But of course, I mean, there are lots of kind of secular ways that'll tell you, you know, you've got to look at your giftings, your personality type, your passions, all these different things. And that is absolutely true. And of course, that's really important. But I think, you know, from a spiritual point of view, I think it's part of guidance. You know, what is God calling me to do? And so I think that there are 5 things for me. It's as I pray, Lord, what do you want me to do with my life? As I read the Bible, will you speak to me through the Bible? As I talk to my friends, what do they think are my gifts? Common sense. It's like, you know, what passions has God put in my heart? What are the things I'm good at? You know, all those kind of things. And then circumstantial signs, you know, what doors open and what doors close? Because to some extent, you know, you just have to pray that God will close the doors that are wrong and open the doors that are right.
Yeah, that's so true. And when it comes to integrating your work life and your faith together, why do you think that's important? Because for a long time, I separated the two a bit, because I used to think they're two separate things, but work is where we spend the majority of our time. So talk about the importance of living according to our Christian values in every area of our lives and integrating the two together.
Well, that's what integrity is about. Like, I don't know whether this is true, but it's, I read somewhere that the reason the Titanic sunk was because they thought it had all these compartments that were separate, and it wouldn't matter if one of them got damaged, because it would just be one that was damaged. But what they didn't take into account is what happened to one would affect all the others, and therefore the Titanic sunk. And it's kind of like, I think, to me, that's an analogy that you if you've got something sort of below the waterline in your life that is wrong, you can't kind of separate these things. You've got to have, leading a life of integrity means leading a life that is integrated, and so that there isn't a distinction. Of course, we're all sinful, weak human beings. We all have faults, and no one's going to lead a perfect life. But as far as possible, that there's an integrity about our life, that we're not pretending that we're something that we're not, and that we are that we're seeking to be the same person at home, you know, in the public life, in the workplace, that there's no difference. We're not one person at work and then another person in the church and another person in the family. You know, it's like being yourself is integrity, because then you're the same person in every situation. And that's something, it doesn't just happen. That's something you have to work at all your life, I think. Just be yourself sounds a really simple advice, but actually that's a lifetime job to have the confidence to be yourself and to work at living out your values in every situation.
Yeah, I think that's so, so true. And earlier we were talking a bit about coronavirus, and I was wondering how that has impacted you and your family, but also how do you kind of find peace in this time of uncertainty? Because many people I've spoken to are quite anxious about the future.
Yeah. Understandable that people are anxious. And yeah. I think when we first heard about it, I was very anxious, because my wife Pippa just had lung cancer. Last November, she had some cancer removed from her lungs. So she had 25% of her lung. And then we heard about a lung disease, you know, and we're both in our, we're both over 65, put it that way. So you look at the things and you think, oh my goodness. And if you have an underlying health condition, you're more vulnerable. And we're in the center of London, and that's where, to begin with, that was, now it's no longer, not right at the moment, it's not the hotspot, but it was then a bit of a hotspot. So you're thinking, oh, do we get out of London? What do we do? And so I have a pattern of, in the morning, I read the Bible, and I do a thing called the Bible in 1 year. And then I go out and I pray and I walk around the park. And as I started to walk, I was thinking, I just sensed, it was like, I don't think I've ever heard a sort of audible voice, but sometimes you get a really strong impression. And I just had this really strong impression of, why are you so afraid? Where is your faith? And I looked up that, where does that come in the New Testament? It comes when a storm comes up. And I think the pandemic, in one sense, has been like a storm that has arisen in our world. And Jesus is in the boat, and he's actually asleep. And the disciples are really, like, really panicking. You know, they think the boat's about to sink. And they wake Jesus up, and he says, you know, where is your faith? Why are you so afraid? And then you know, he calms the storm and there's peace. And I think that so for me, that the key thing is that we just have, that faith is the way to overcome our fears. Doesn't mean you don't have fears. I certainly, you know, often troubled by fears and anxieties and things, but I think I constantly have to remind myself to trust God, that to do the sensible things. You know, I don't think praying means we don't need soap. You know, I don't think we should wash our hands and keep our social distance and wear the masks and all the rest. You've got to use common sense. But I think ultimately we have to trust God, and we have to, faith overcomes fear. That's the power of that story. And to try and live in a relationship of trust, and to try and look outward. You know, how can I serve at this time? How can I make a difference? So we started this thing, Love Your Neighbor, which is like, how can we feed the hungry? Because there's a famine on our doorstep, and the church has the infrastructure. It's the government doesn't have an infrastructure to reach all the people who are hungry. The church has an infrastructure in every village, right across every town, every city. And in the pandemics, and I've got this book on my desk, The Rise of Christianity, how the obscure marginal Jesus movement became the dominant religious force in the Western world in a few centuries. So it's by Rodney Stark, it's by a sociologist. And chapter 4 is the pandemics. In the pandemic of 165 and 261, the church exploded in growth because the pagans ran away and the church ran towards the need. So what we've said is, like, this is not a moment for the church to retreat. This is a moment for the kingdom of God to advance, and for the church to be on the front line of. So we provided hot meals for the doctors and nurses right from here, right from Church House, at from our local, you know, HTB's Church Hall. We have provided 500,000 meals across London, and together with other church, we came. Love Your Neighbor then grew to other churches, got involved, and we provided 3 million meals across the country. So, you know, I think, it's really important to be outward looking. And that, in a way, is an answer to anxiety, and it's to start looking after other people rather than looking inward at yourself. How can we help other people? Phone calls to people who are isolated. You know, we've tried to ring everyone in the church. How are you? How can we pray for you? And a lot of people are really having a tough time right now. Yeah. But our job is to feed the hungry, care for the sick, and to bring the good news. You know, the message of Jesus is good news. Jesus died for you. He was raised to life. There is life beyond death. That a lot of people are facing death, but death is not the end. That Jesus has defeated death, and there's hope for the world. And I feel that we are, the church, are dealers in hope. The world lacks hope, but we have the greatest hope in Jesus, and in his death and resurrection. And that's a message that the world really needs to hear right now.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. One of the topics that I wanted to kind of bring up today is this whole thing about leadership. And I know you have a leadership conference that you organized. Is it once a year or?
Yeah, it was until the virus. We did it once a year at the Albert Hall. We've done it for 10 years. Not always, the last 7 or 8 years at the Albert Hall.
Yeah. Yeah. So when it comes to leadership, like what would you say makes a good leader, especially during times of uncertainty like now? And what are some of the characteristics, and how can the average person learn to be a good leader? Do you think it's open to everyone, and how would you kind of explain that?
I think leadership of John Maxwell, who's one of the sort of leadership experts, says leadership is influence, and everybody has influence. So in that sense, everybody is a leader. At another level, you could say, you know, no one is a leader apart from Jesus. If you're a Christian, you say Jesus is our leader, and no one else really is a leader. We're all servants. And the Bible talks a lot more about service than it talks about leadership. So there are two ways of looking at it. But what I would say is never make leadership an aim in your life. It's not a goal to be a leader. Try and do something with your life. And that may require you to lead, because you may end up having to, you know, having to get teams together in order to do what you're trying to do. If you're trying to feed the hungry, you might find you can do it yourself. But then if you want to do loads of it, you need to get other people involved, and you end up leading, but not as an end in itself. No one should ever want to be a leader. They should want to do things, and leadership is a byproduct. And then how do you tell when someone's a leader? You look over their shoulder and see if there's anyone following. That's the definition of a leader. And then leadership is really is about service. That's the primary character. Jesus was the greatest leader of all time. And he said, the Son of Man didn't come to be served. Leadership is not about getting other people to serve you. The Son of Man didn't come to be served. He came to serve. And leadership is about service. That's the Santos model, is serve to lead. And I think increasingly the world is recognizing that. The best leaders are the servant leaders. Simon Sinek's book, Leaders Eat Last. You know, that is what leadership's about. It's about looking after other people and trying to help other people and serve other people.
Yeah, I think that's a great kind of definition. So since we're short on time, I want to move on to ask you a hypothetical question. If it was many, this is something I ask all the people that come on the podcast, by the way. If it was many years from now, and it's the last day for you, and the books you've written, the social media posts, they're all erased for some reason, and you can write down three things of everything you know about life, or whatever it may be, three things that you would leave to the world of your biggest lessons, what would those three things be?
I think love God. You know, have a relationship with God would be the number one thing. Find a relationship with, that's the purpose for which you were created, is to have a relationship with God. That's the place where you will find the ultimate purpose of life. Secondly, I would say love. I've been so blessed. I've been happily married for 42 years. Love your spouse, your husband, your wife, your family. Prioritize your relationships. In the end of the day, it's people that count. Nobody's going to ask you. When you go to a funeral, no one talks about, you know, how many hours they worked in the office and how many staff they had on their team in the office. They talked about the fact that they loved their wife, their husband, their children, that it's what you do for other people it's love. That, so Jesus would be my first thing. Love would be the second thing. And the third thing would be belonging, community, you know, people. Again, it's all about people. It's about friendship. I haven't invested enough in my friends. I have so many wonderful friends, but life is so busy that we hardly ever see them. But community really matters. That's why the church is the most beautiful community on earth, because it's a place where you can be yourself, have great friends, be encouraged. And I think everyone is looking for those three things. Everyone is looking for purpose, which can only ultimately be found in a relationship with God through Jesus. Everyone is looking for love and to know that they're loved. That's the most important thing. You are loved because there is a God who loves you, but everyone's looking for love, and everyone's looking to belong. And the place where you find supremely is in the Church of Jesus. That's the place where you find true belonging and community and your purpose in this world.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I'm going to move on to a quick fire question round. So this is just like...
I'm hopeless at this.
So yeah, whatever comes to your mind, if nothing comes to mind, you can just pass.
I'll do like the mastermind. I'll get zero.
Okay, the first question is, what are one to around three books that you would say have greatly influenced your life? I can see so many books behind you. You've probably read so many books, but if you had to write down three books that had the greatest influence in your life, what would they be?
Well, I'll tell you three books that I have read recently.
Yeah.
So I've already mentioned one, The Rise of Christianity by Rodney Stark. This book, Jesus and the Disinherited by Howard Thurman. Howard Thurman was an African and American theologian. He died in 1982. He wrote this book in 1949, and he was taught the faith by his grandmother, who had been a slave.
Wow.
That tells you how recent slavery was. And this book was the book that influenced Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement. And Martin Luther King had this book in his pocket on the Montgomery marches.
Wow.
It is the most beautiful book. But the chapter on Jesus is so beautiful. Jesus was a Jew. Jesus was a poor Jew. And Jesus was a poor Jew in an oppressive under an oppressive regime. And he likens that to the situation of African Americans. And for me, it links where we started with my family, that race, how horrible racism is, anti-Semitism. Jesus was a Jew. And yet Howard Thurman says, that's what the African Americans identify with Jesus, because he was a poor Jew under an oppressive regime. Paul was a Roman, but Jesus was a Jew. If a Roman soldier pushed Jesus into a ditch, he would just be another Jew in a ditch. Mm. And so this is an immensely powerful book. And the other book that I've just got on my desk is The Choice by Edith Eger. She was a ballerina, age 16, and she was sent to Auschwitz. She's now a psychologist. And this book is called The Choice. And it says, even in hell, hope. The subtitle is, even in hell, hope can flower. And I think this is such an important book for this moment.
Yeah.
You know, for many people, it feels like they're going through hell. But there was no place closer to hell than Auschwitz in the whole history of the human race. And yet she can write, even in hell, hope can flower. So I think it's an important book for the world right now. Oprah Winfrey, I got that as a recommendation from one of Oprah Winfrey's programs.
Wow, yeah. The second question is, if you could have a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, metaphorically speaking, getting a message out to millions or billions of people, what would it say and why?
I think it would just say, God loves you. I think that's what people need to know more than anything, is there is a God that he loves. He's a God of love, and he loves you. He doesn't just love the world. He loves Reuben. You know, that's the key thing to know in life. It's as personal as that. St. Paul wrote, the Son of God loved me and gave himself for me. Many people believe that Jesus died for the world, but they don't believe that Jesus died for them. And it's when you know that God loves you that much, that if you had been the only person in the world, Jesus would have died for you. That is life-changing.
100%, yeah. Third question is, when you feel overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do?
Well, what I should do is pray. What I would do is talk to Pips, my wife. But the first point to start, Joyce Meyer says, you should go to the throne rather than to the phone.
Yeah.
It's like
that's most, so true.
People,
yeah.
Most people go to the phone when they're overwhelmed.
Yeah.
But actually, you should go to the throne, go to Jesus. And that should be the starting point. But I think, I think my starting point is always, Pips, help, what do I do?
Cool. And the final question is, what are you most grateful for?
I'm most grateful for the people, the people who introduced me to Jesus, because that is like, that's the turning point in my life was when I was 18. And as a result, well, Nikki and Silla Lee, in a way, that my good friends who encountered Jesus 48 hours before me, but that was led me to read the New Testament and to encounter Jesus. And that was, I know you only asked for one thing, but I'm most grateful. And then the second most thing I'm most grateful for is meeting Pip and having 42 years of just marrying the, I always say that the in theory, only Jesus is without sin. But I think I have a feeling that the closest thing is my wife. She's the closest thing to perfection. And I'm just so blessed. You know, I think Pips would have been happily married to whoever she whoever married her would have been happy. But I was the blessed man who got to marry her. And we've been so blessed with three wonderful children and nine grandchildren. I have so much to be grateful for. Great. Plus, I've got the best job in the world, by the way. Mm. that is also a huge blessing.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much. And where could people follow the work you're doing and follow you on social media? I think you're on Instagram, right? And
I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, but I'm not really worth following. You know, if you look up Alpha or HDB, yeah. Alpha is a great way to explore things, and HDB will tell you all about all the stuff that's going on here. But I wouldn't bother following. I'm very boring on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
I think I've seen some of your posts, and I actually quite like it. I think it's at Nikki Gumbel, right, on Instagram.
I think I'm just Nikki Gumbel.
Okay, great. Good. I'm gonna leave it there. I think we've been able to cover quite a lot, and you've shared some really great insights and advice. So yeah, thank you once again. I think you've really inspired me in so many ways, and thank you for your ministry and the work you're doing, because it's impacted like millions of people. So Thank you once again. And
it's been a privilege to be on your podcast, Ruben, and it's so nice to meet you. And I hope when lockdown's over, we'll be able to get together more in person. I hope you'll be able to come around here and meet the family.
Great. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.